Hello and welcome to Plant Pals, my podcast where I talk to my pals about plants. I promise the audio is only this bad for the intro. I'm your host Mike, and my pal this week is Pete Grima, a botanist out of Western Massachusetts, so we basically talk about Massachusetts the whole time. But it's not alienating. Here we go.
Pete Grima. I'm a forester and a botanist in Western Massachusetts. And I'm a plant pal.
Did you go to UMass Amherst?
I did my grad work at UMass.
Nice.
Had a storied background before that. I was an engineer, Boston, went to Northeastern. And then I went to grad school for physics. And I was PhD track for that. But I couldn't stop thinking about trees. And I hopped across campus and met with who became my advisor, Bill Patterson. I don't know if he was still there when you were at UMass, right?
Does he do fire stuff?
He was the fire. Yeah, he taught the fire course there.
Yeah, I had his lab.
And I asked him, am I crazy if I want to switch from physics to forestry? I've never even taken a biology class. He gave me a long list of grad students he had who were lawyers or political science, a poet, a philosopher who had gone on to get graduate degrees. And so I wasn't crazy. And I hopped over across campus and got a master's in forestry studying pitch pine barrens. Montague Plains.
Did you have we've determined it's called a come to Jesus moment? Where you're like, I'm going to do this now and forever.
Yeah.
Do you have one of those?
I guess, let's see, was it a moment? I mean, it was sort of in retrospect. So when I was a physicist, I was studying for my qualifying exams. It's like, that's when you can start actually working on your PhD, once you pass those. Mm-hmm. And I lived in Amherst, and I'd start my morning I'd get up, I'd have coffee, and then I'd hike up in the woods. I lived at the edge, the Pelham Woods edge. Yep. I'd go on like a 2-hour hike in Pelham. And then I'd sit down and do all my physics problems and prepare for the test. And all that time, I was like looking at chestnut oaks and following deer around and, you know, looking at the habitat change and all the bedrock formations. And I realized I was actually studying for what I was interested in. That's when I was like, oh, you know, I could study trees for read about trees all day. But
yeah,
the physics stuff was really starting to wear me out. So that was sort of the... You know, I'm doing all this, I'm learning all this stuff just as a hobby. And then apparently I knew things that people that spent their time doing it didn't know already, that maybe I should take it more seriously. So that was I guess that's the forestry come to Jesus.
Yeah.
There's been a lot of come to Jesus moments, Mike. So, because I didn't even consider myself a botanist until, let's see, maybe 10 years ago. And even though I thought about plants all the time, and I used to take my birthday off to go look for plants, and I'd go fishing, but I'd walk through Rich Mesick Woods to look at the flowers before that. But I wasn't a botanist. You know, I just thought about plants all the time. And then I was at work one day, and I was just walking out of this woodlot, and I stepped on these flowers that I recognized. That was a three birds orchid. Holy shit. I've never seen it before. I knew what it was, though. Again, like, I'm not a botanist, but I know what the three birds orchid is before. Mm-hmm. I never saw it. But it's like, man, what's this doing here? And then the rabbit hole opened up, and I start thinking, like, geez, what, you know, this isn't known from this part of the state. It's a new population. This is starting to be, it's a different habitat than it's described. And I'm like, I should really start taking this a little more seriously.
That's super cool.
And I, you know, he used to try to keep my two identities separate. Like, oh no, I'm a forester at work. I can't look at the plants, but it's ridiculous. Like, I'm, especially in the Berkshires, they're so botanically diverse, and especially the sedges and Rich Mesick Forest and the subalpine zone and Greylock. It's to ignore the botany was absurd. And as soon as I flipped that switch, just like the kit, you know, the torrent of things have opened up for me.
Yeah.
And I'm like, all right, I guess I am a botanist now. Eventually, it took a few years after that where I think I'm legit now. Even though I still have the same job, but I feel different.
different. No, I know. It's that forestry. That was my minor, or not technically a minor, tract, I guess, at UMass.
Yeah.
And I was awful at it. The forest measurements class we talked about. Like I just could not grok how to measure a tree in terms of economic board feet. And I was just like, man, shit. Like I thought this was going to be, I went from not knowing that you could work outside to being like, I'm going to be, you know, the lumberjack with the flannel and the straps. And now I'm just like, shit, what do I do now? I think it was in Pelham Woods too, is my midterm that I bombed. It's like, okay, actually, I'm not cut out for this one specifically.
That seems to be the way a lot of the forestry undergrads have gone. You know, it's not very few of them become foresters, but I've always thought that it's valuable to have a forestry background to work in natural resources because you learn to look at the woods differently. Just being able to quantify things, and what's Bill Patterson used to say, know how to be in the woods and working and being productive, or something along those lines. Not just, you know, everybody can go in the woods, but and being productive and like getting your job done. It's like, and having good data at the end of the day. That's a skill that a good forestry curriculum instills in you, I hope. So,
yeah. No, it is tricky getting over that hump where you're like, okay, I did it. I am getting paid to look at plants now. And it's like, oh, I can't just sit for 4 hours next to these three bird orchids and enjoy the presence. I have to go do 9 transects. Like, oh, okay, like, gotta turn on work mode. This is a new experience. Like, this isn't the deli counter I used to work at.
But am I the first masshole you've had on the show?
Oh, Jesus. I don't know. I haven't done one of these since September. God, I feel like there might be somebody that's going to yell at me. New York. Maybe.
I haven't listened to every single episode. I'm sorry. Should I admit that? It's okay. Just the people I follow, which much to the chagrin of many people is a very short list. I have bad social media etiquette. I only follow people that I can actually follow.
Oh, yeah. No, it's like, well, you're a stranger. Like, prove to me that you shouldn't be a stranger, you know? It's all fake.
There's so many great accounts, but I, you know, try to get good geographic representation and some humor. It goes a long way to get my attention. But
I know it's... Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I'm from Massachusetts. I grew up not quite towards Plymouth area, but Seekonk, you know Seekonk?
Yep.
Before you get into Providence, so... I've never left. You escaped. Look, good for you.
Escape. At the time, I thought it was an escape, but every time I go home, I'm like, damn. Like, now that I kind of have, like, fresh eyes, I'm like, this place rules. Like, it's Pine Barrens are so great, and I miss, like, standing water. That's a big thing that I don't have. Rain in the summer.
Well, we've had plenty of that. I can bottle some up for you.
Yeah. I don't know. We're getting slammed this week. And I'm surprised my power is still intact for this conversation right now. This time last year, I was canceling recordings because it was just like inundated with flooding, trees down, and it was the end of the times. But I was home last for Thanksgiving. And I was just, you know, I was down in Mashpee. And I was just like, you know, enjoying the like ancient dune forests that are there and fishing around and just like warm storms, that kind of like end of fall, like last little hurricane remnant was hitting. And I was like, God, like this is a very specific vibe that I have missed very much.
Yep. I have a few hurricanes that come to mind. I've caught some great, great trout after hurricanes. I don't know about you, but.
Ooh, I know. I didn't know that was an angle to it.
Well, it's the high waters sort of flush them out of their little creek beds. They get into some big pools. Really memorable, probably the nicest brook you ever caught was I don't want to date myself, but it was a prominent hurricane. that's swept up the Massachusetts coast in the past, but when I was a child. And it was a memorable, it was a wild brookie. You know, we caught lots of stockies, but this one was just a different beast. You know, it was 14 inches, which is for a wild brookie is in Massachusetts is
yeah,
it's pretty respectable.
So growing up, you were an outdoor kid?
I guess so. Yeah. I mean, we had woods in our backyard. We had a little brook. And, you know, my siblings and I, we joke about it now because we thought it was the biggest wilderness in the world. And now we go up my mom's house and you can see all the way to the brook. You know, it's like 100 yards into the woods, but it felt wild. And yeah, it was just enough to get out and get tangled up in some greenbrier, get your foot stuck in the mud. Big blueberry swamp back there. Ooh. There's actually some nice swamp white oaks, which is, swamp white oak tells me is probably a little bit different land use than some. There's a lot of red maple swamp, as you know, in southeastern Mass, which is basically the old wet meadow, wet hay field that reverted back to red maple stand after it was abandoned. But if there's oaks in the mix, usually it suggests maybe it was woodlot or at least wasn't as beat up as other stands. So it was a pretty cool spot. And the brook back, I never fished in that brook, but it was there. And there's, you know, a brook is like a friend in the woods. I've met a number of foresters that they have like this exact story. Like, oh yeah, I grew up with woods in my backyard and had a brook that we just called the brook. And, you know, it's like the origin story for many a forester that just figure out that you want to keep reliving that, that feeling of being out under the trees for a while.
Oh, no, especially. I'm the same way. I had the same thing. I had a little brook, you know, thank God for fragmented landscapes because I had this little parcel of woods in my neighborhood that would go out and run around and get into trouble. And yeah, same deal. There was a brook that like, even as a kid, like we traced like a source of pollution for it. We're like, damn, this is kind of wild. But it would, you know, generally be clean enough for the stretch of it. We try to build forts along it and fuck around, climb trees.
Yeah. Yeah. And we have almost the exact same setup. I live in Greenfield and same thing. It's woods, a brook, and then this nice hemlock forested swamp behind that. I don't own it, but it's there and I can just walk into it. And my kids have spent their time out there doing the same thing. At least, you know, they're not the same as me. They're not going to be little woods monkeys like their old man. But someday they'll remember that they had woods in their backyard.
I mean, hey, who knows? It took you to grad school to jump into woods monkey, right?
Right, exactly. Yeah. Those memories die hard. So I did my job.
Yeah. I know, even just like basic plant literacy is something that's so awesome to have. That was what was bugging me, like that made me come to Jesus, where I was like, I don't know any of the names of these things and that they're everywhere. This is driving me nuts. Like, how can I not describe this 40-foot tree outside of my classroom right now?
When I first moved to Amherst, I remember telling my dad that we had fir trees in my yard. I'm like, God, you friggin' idiot. Those are hemlocks. You committed the cardinal sin of a Yankee. I didn't call them pines, I guess. But, you know, to mix up your conifers like that, it's really low. I'm admitting it on air, too. Like, it's wrong.
Confessions of a Massachusetts botanist.
This is exclusive content.
They look similar young, too. Like, I have stopped and been like, wait, no.
I'll forgive you for saying that. But let's see. At UMass, did you take a class with Karen Searcy? She taught a class called New England Flora.
I took the ID one.
Okay. Maybe she hadn't. Let's see. Did she retire?
I was there 2016, 17.
Oh.
Yeah, those 2 years.
All right. I guess she had probably just retired right before that then. But that's another come to Jesus moment. I very reluctantly took her course, which was based, you know, it's called New England Flora, but it was the plant taxonomy course. My advisor was really insistent that I should take this. And I had to take it for graduate credit. So I had to do an adjunct. And even though I knew how to key all the trees already, as for day one was keying twigs. I'm like, I got this. Like, why do I have to take this class? But then my adjunct, I had to go through all of these vouchers from 1980 that had just been in a cabinet because they were in, they hadn't been identified yet. And they were, you know, it's like, here, work. And they were all sedges and grasses. So that was my graduate adjunct was working through grasses and sedges that were older than me. And the reason they weren't identified, this was, they were collected by Harry Aulis, who was the curator of the herbarium from, like, I want to say the 50s, right up until he died in 1981. And he had a particular eye for things. So if he didn't identify it, it's because it was probably some wonky hybrid, something new, like something that's going to drive you bonkers trying to identify it. That's what I cut my teeth on. And
damn.
And I guess I liked it because it didn't scare me away. And then I, you know, then I'm like, I still didn't think I was a botanist, but I was like bringing grasses home to identify during my field work in the summer. And I still have them, actually. They're all the worst specimens. You know, I haven't brought them to the herbarium yet because they're kind of embarrassing. And I just like, what did I do? Stuff them in my field vest and then roll them under a pie sheet. But, you know, it's just, they're still here. I can't throw them out.
Yeah.
You don't want to destroy that, the data. But so they'll get there. You know, I'll will them to UMass Herbarium at some point. So then Karen was my professor there, and she actually became what I call my botanical godmother. I'd see cool plants after I graduated, and I'd just email her and say, oh, imagine this. Look what I saw. She hooked me up with a travel grant to go to New Jersey Pine Barrens with the New England Botanical Club when I was still a grad. It was two of us won this, and the other one was Tomas Zavada, who's on Instagram under his name, I think. And we roomed up, and we got to go for free down to Pine Barrens for a long weekend, which was pretty sick.
That's super cool.
As I was studying Pine Barrens up here, and, you know, forestry nerd, we go into this awesome orchid bog, and everybody, like, zooms into the Arethusa, and I think there was curly grass fern and all these cool things. And what if I'm like beeline to Atlantic white cedar, like this beautiful stand of Atlantic white cedar. I'm like, wow, look at the bark on this stuff. Everybody's gawking at the orchid. I got the orchids too. But,
no, I'm right there with you. I beeline every time. There's like six of them left and they're all this big. So anything of any like distinguishable size, you're like, oh my God.
Yeah. And I had written a paper in my graduate stand dynamics class on Chamaecyparis dynamics. So I was like extra obsessed with Chamaecyparis. Thioides.
Yeah. I like hearing genera's names that I never say out loud.
Well, you have more Chamaecyparis. You have some great Cupressaceae out your
side. I know. I'm in the kind of hot spot for Hesperocyparis. Around the Monterey Bay, there's a bunch of different taxa that are like between 1 and 5 sites total population. And then, like redwoods, you know, I've still not gotten over those. Those are nuts. I'm thinking like every time I see a redwood that is like, you know, kind of newer second cut growth, that it's still bigger than most of like the white pines I had seen in Eastern Massachusetts. And I'm so like, yeah, you know, whatever. It's just another tree. I'm like, this would have made me stop in my tracks back home.
Yeah, that's exactly how I felt in Oregon in September, October.
Oh, yeah.
Because I was I started on the coast. So what's that? Stanislaus National Forest? Is that something? No, Suslaw. Suslaw National Forest. Pretty sure. SIUS.
You're up there for a bit, right? Did you get some good botanizing?
I got some okay botanizing for the time of year. I got to see a lot of conifers, but... You know, even the second growth Sitka spruce were at least as wide as my desk or bigger, and the Doug furs. And I'm like, oh, I'm okay that this is second growth because it's all beautiful. But I got to, it wasn't quite growing season, but I got to see, a good cross section from the coast to the dry site.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
And I got a whole bunch of pine cones. I don't have my box of cones in this room, but I got enough cones for my collection, which is now woefully unlabeled.
I know. I tried to do mine over the summer, and I gave up halfway through. Just going off of memory, I'm like, I can't honestly say what this is. Like, this is another cone of a subspecies that may or not be described.
Well, I don't have that level of detail yet. At least I have them boxed by region and maybe trip. I have
that's pretty
cool. Yeah, Chiricahua cones. I think I have some Sedona cones. So at least they're narrowed down. Whereas up until the last 5 years, I just collect pitch pine cones or, you know, red pine from every native red pine in Massachusetts, which there aren't many.
Yeah.
I've collected cones from. And now I don't remember which ones came from where, but because they're a different size. The native ones have really tiny cones, at least some of them do. This is more data that I guess that I collected that is now worthless because I didn't label it. But
so, at risk of sounding like Jerry Seinfeld, what's the deal with red pine in Massachusetts? Because the Pine Barrens near where I grew up, Miles Standish State Park, had a huge clear cutting of all the plantations. But then you see them on these crazy, craggy, rocky outcrops, like one or two or three, right?
Yeah. And it's as soon as you go not too far north, like even right across from Brattleboro, Vermont, on the Hampshire side, there's a oaky pine bald with lots of scrub oak. But instead of pitch pine, it's red pine. So that's like, I don't know, like 15 miles north of Massachusetts. So you get into red pine very quickly north. So we have little vestiges of it, but most of it, like you said, most of it's planted because it was easy to grow as a plantation mm-hmm. tree and plant them out. And they did really well on sandy soil until they didn't thin them because of basically World War II kind of prevented a lot of thinnings that should have happened in red pine. But yeah, let's see. Where do I see them? There's some in right here in Greenfield on the Poet Seat Ridge. On the south end of the ridge, you get juniper and pitch pine. And as you go north, you get into pitch pine or red pine. And then it's mostly red pine. It's like a perfect, it's the same habitat type, but this little climatic mingling of the three rocky ridge species that you'd see in the Connecticut River Valley. A little frozen moment in time. There's some nice ones. There's a few at Greylock I found way high up. Clarksburg State Forest, which is just south of the Vermont border. There's some other ones in the Connecticut Valley, but yeah, they're really vestiges of some former climate where red pine was, I guess it would, you know, there's fire involved in all these sites, but I'm not going to be able to speak articulately to the fire regime off the cuff, but once it becomes drier with more frequent fire, it transitions to pitch pine is sort of what I'm perceiving. But I think that summarizes it. That's like the back of the envelope summary. Same sites,
I know,
but different fire return interval.
There must be a few scattered ones around Amherst. I feel like I saw one or two, but never.
I've saw one. Like, yep.
You saw one?
At up below, you know where Cliffside Apartments is in Sunderland? Sugarloaf?
No, maybe. Maybe I went to a party there once.
Yeah, you probably did. There's a sketchy bar there. There's some cliffs, and right up above it, I found this one. There's some pitch pine and red cedar up there, but just tucked back. There's this one red pine, like just chilling. It wasn't planted. So there's some in Leverett, some at Mount Tom, Irving. I don't know if you're a rock climber. There's this famous rock climbing place in Irving called Hermit Mountain. No, Hermit Mountain's where the red pine is, and there's another mountain. That's all right. I don't want to.
Yeah, I'm not a rock climber.
I don't want to ruin the rock climber's spot either by advertising it. But there's some red pines up there too. That's the Millers River Valley. Same thing. Steep, rocky, kind of had some fire evidence of historic fire regime that kept it around.
But. Yeah. And so their kind of relation to Pine Barrens is anthropogenic more so than they also.
Yeah, it's 100% anthropogenic. They were just planting, you know, they're not going to plant pitch pine because pitch pine grows. Like pitch pine, like a sine wave. they're like red pine goes on sandy sites, and they'd plant white pine on the better sites.
Yep.
Norway spruce they plant on wet sites, and occasionally you'd see white spruce or it's one of the other ones I see once in a while. There's some funky ones. White spruce would show up. There's still some relictual white spruce plantations that didn't work out too well. But yeah, lots of Norway spruce on the wetter or more degraded sites.
Yeah, those Norway spruce plantings are wild. It's just I just never expected to see those grown in such a way. Yeah. It's so dark in there.
Yeah, I've seen some really, really impressive ones. The most impressive one was on a city property that got clear cut, but never mind that. That was a memorable moment in my work. And then I did get to see a moose in that stand after the cut, though. That was my closest moose encounter was in that clear cut Norway spruce stand. It was like me and the moose. It was like a mile and a half into the woods in the middle of nowhere, one of these Berkshire no man's lands. And it's just knoll right in the middle of the clear cut. All those plantations were put on old pastures. So this was some old hilltop pasture in the middle of nowhere, now returned to an open pasture condition, and me and the moose coming right on the other, either sides of this knoll. And it's a classic stupid delayed realization. Like, what the hell's a horse doing up here? And we're just keep bumping along until we both realize, like, what the it was thinking, like, what the hell are you doing up here? And
yeah,
then we went our separate ways. But it was
both freeze. You're like, what?
But I probably, we sworn to secrecy, but sorry, moose.
It took me to go to Montana to see a moose. I don't think I've ever seen a moose in New England.
Well, you're out of luck now. Their population is way down.
Yeah.
Fortunately, I haven't seen one in several years.
Damn. Yeah. Yeah, I knew they were migrating north, migrating being a very nice way to say the ticks are sucking them dry before they can get sexually mature.
Yeah.
But yeah, I would vacation in southern Maine every summer. Just never saw one. Western Mass, there was always moose sign out in Pelham Woods, but
yep. Oh, what? Oh,
surprisingly man. Sneaky for a truck-sized deer.
That was Cadwell Forest in Pelham was actually, that was my closest moose encounter. That was during when I was the TA for the measurements class. I had to join this kid whose lab partner didn't show up. And we were like... really into the thick mountain laurel, the kind you have to clamber through and that you can't run through if you wanted to. And we heard this galloping. We both looked like trying to peer under the mountain laurel. All I could see were like this like tan things moving back and forth. I think it's a dog. No, I can't. then it was like within 100 feet. You're like, realize you look above the mountain, we're like, oh shit, it's a bull moose, like giant rack of antlers, barging, like running through the mountain laurel like it was a meadow. And of course, he's coming right at us. Like, that's the way it always happens. He's coming right at us.
Yeah.
So we had to, as quickly as possible, removed ourselves and end up running in a different direction. But somebody had scared it off is what it was doing. It was crossed up on the road.
It was already running from somebody?
Yes, it was running away from somebody. It wasn't charging us. But the whole class in that semester was traumatized by our professor, my advisor, because he told some basically like horror stories about people being trampled by moose and how you needed to be careful and respect them. And he had a close encounter on his own. And he like very dramatically, he's like, that moose had decided to run towards me. I don't think I would have made it. it was like a camp counselor telling a story around the campfire to freak everybody out.
They're so huge in aggro if they want to be, but like it's never going to have the same punch as like a bear or something, you know, like, oh, that moose, you know, it really almost got me. It's like, yeah. Oh, come on, it's a moose. It's like, oh no, this is like, you know, like a bull moose at shoulder height is taller than somebody.
I'm still afraid of them. it's deep seated now. But now they're hardly around. So I managed to get one antler, thankfully, before the population dwindled.
Yeah.
But I like seeing them. You know, they always said they'd never be down here. It's like classic. And I hate on wildlife biologists. Is that too controversial?
Hey, it's your opinions. I do.
I've heard of so many. The dogmatic wildlife biologists, they can't do that because they'll overheat. They need a certain temperature because they'll overheat. We're 100% certain of their biology and their behavior. And what do the moose do? They come down here just like we do, and they go in the shade or they go in the pond and they deal with it and they survive. They're animals.
we just adapt. Have to make them admit that there's cougars in the
mountains. Oh, gosh. You know, I'm going to volitionally pretend like there aren't, because it makes my day much more, peaceful if I'm not worrying about the possibility of a mountain lion in the Berkshires. Yeah. I don't want to have to work in cougar country right now.
I mean, I am kind of, I guess irresponsible is the right word about it, but it's like they do the honor of just taking you out from behind. By the time they're on you, you're already done, like in and out quick, hopefully, if they don't go for your guts first. But yeah, I know, I just like, I'm just so used to. And then black bears in Southeast Mass are coming back in like a considerable breeding population way, and that's brand spanking new. And so like I was home and I was like doing the bear clap and I was like, I'm not used to this. I could, you know, just tromp around all I wanted to as a kid. It's nice that there's animals moving back in, but I was like, wow, this is like a new paradigm.
Bears I've come to deal with. Growing up, and you know, I would have been terrified to go outside I knew there were bears in Southeastern Mass.
Yeah. You know,
it took me a long time to like mentally come to terms with working in bear country, but I'm not too worried about bears anymore. Yeah.
No, I always think black bears are like 700-pound raccoons if you're not making them feel threatened.
I've had one uncomfortable encounter, the black bear.
Yeah.
But it's otherwise they all, well, mostly they're not there. They just, you don't see them. They're already gone.
Yeah.
And otherwise they're running away or they think they're hiding, but they're not. Yeah. Like, all right, I'll just go the other way. But I had one that acted funny. It was way up a mountain out in the town of Hancock, which is near New York border. And I saw this way up the mountain. I heard some crashing. And then I saw this bear standing up looking at me. I did the bear thing, like, see you, get out of here. And he ran away. And I'm like, all right, I guess I've seen what I need to see. Start heading back down the mountain. And I kept looking over my shoulder. And instead of looking over my shoulder, I should have been looking forward, because all of a sudden, like right in front of me, this bear comes barreling out, like cutting me off in front of me. And it wasn't like running towards me, but it definitely wasn't running away from me. So I thought maybe he was confused. So I yelled at him again, or her, and ran off. And I kept going down the mountain, and then it did the same thing again. And then the third time, I was like, all right, this not going to happen again. So then he got a big stick and yelled and scared it off.
Chasing
and then,
you off. You know,
I don't know. Somebody said maybe I had a cub treed and it was just trying to make sure I got the hell out of there. Whatever. Whatever it was, the main message was get out of here.
Yeah. So time for you to leave now.
I listened.
Bird, Jeff.
Beautiful hillside too. It was like tons just carpeted with blue cohosh and wild leeks. I'm really spoiled in the Berkshires because it's just the rich Mesic forest is gangbusters.
Yeah.
Yeah. Even degraded sites are just covered in stuff that Eastern Mass. It's actually kind of exhausting when some of the Eastern botanists come out and they're like stopping it, like, oh my gosh, Viola rostrata. Wow. I'm like, God damn, this is the most common violet in the Berkshires. It's actually watch listed. Because they think it's rare. As soon as you get outside of the Berkshires, it just disappears. But
wow.
Yeah, we're spoiled. Just like we said before the recording started, like Greylock is like a little fairyland in southern New England that. It's unlike everything else. So,
what's it? The only peak over 4,000 feet in Massachusetts?
It's not. It's over 3,000. It's the only one. God, yeah,
that's it.
It's 34 and change. 3462. Wow. Yeah, you have to go a ways up into Vermont to get one, or you go to the Catskills. There's a handful of peaks over 3,000 there. True subalpine. Once you get to 2,700, 2,800. It's a legit subalpine. And yeah, the spruce fir, there's a showy mountain ash up there. There's that little wood rush, Luzula parviflora. Only site in southern New England, obviously. It doesn't, and it's hardly even occurs in the Green Mountains. I should probably check with Grace Glynn about that. You have to get way up in the greens, like. The 4,000 footers, Camelback, Mansfield, it shows up more frequently there, shows up more frequently in the White Mountains than Katahdin area, but it's not common. But for some reason, it's just kicking around on Greylock. We haven't killed it yet.
Yeah. I know, that's always crazy, like finding these weird kind of outliers on the tippity tops of mountains, and you're like, oh man, like, shoot, sorry bud.
Yeah,
nice to know you.
There's literally one plant of mountain cranberry on Greylock. It's grown right on
really?
The road. It's on the road. It's a huge cascade of it. I've probably posted it like 10 times, the same plant.
That's cool.
Everybody loves it though. And they're like, yeah, it's loaded with berries. But I like to, there's this huge landslide on the east face that is basically inaccessible. It's like so steep, you'd have to belunk or what it is, rappel down to it. I like to believe that maybe there's some mountain cranberries that have established on that landslide that we'll never know about.
I don't know. I mean, hey, talking about rock climbing earlier, go hire one of them out.
I was actually seriously considering some rappelling excursions at Mount Toby. You must know Mount Toby, right? Remember Mount Toby?
No, Mount Tom better.
Oh gosh, Toby's, it's a UMass forest too, just north of the campus.
I mean, yes.
There's a waterfall. You must have done a lab at Mount Toby. Otherwise your professors failed you. Yeah,
Mount Toby is—it's not part of. Oh my God, I'm outing myself as having forgotten my roots. The ridge through Connecticut River Valley there,
like the
right south
range?
Of Hadley. Yeah, thank you.
No, it is not. It's on the other side. Okay. It's north of Amherst. The big standalone mountain. That's my other favorite mountain, Toby. Okay. I call it the Greylock of the Valley, the Connecticut Valley, because It's the sort of same, serves the same function. I think it's the highest point down in the valley anyway. You have to have been there. But anyway, that's okay. You can forget things. I'm forgetting.
If I ever learned them in the first place. I'm so bad about keeping track of names of prominences.
Okay. What was I saying about Toby?
It's your favorite spot.
Rappelling. There's some super steep slopes on the right above the railroad that are super rich and have, let's see, for anybody that knows hickory hop hornbeam habitats, like Solidago, Ulmifolia, yeah. Super abundant there. It's Helianthus, Divaricetus, like all these things that show up in the Holyoke Range on the most diverse sites with tons of rare plants are on the super steep slope that I climbed once and regrettably, because I think I slid down the slope 25 feet a few times and got some dirt under my fingernails trying to keep myself from sliding all the way down the mountain. Probably wouldn't do it again, or wouldn't advise anybody to do it again. But I was thinking, it was just today driving around, like, I wonder if I should find out if somebody has some rappelling gear. there's a few rare plants that are historic from Mount Toby that have not been discovered since the 19th century. And I'm working on a flora of Mount Toby with a bunch of botanists. And you know, relocating these things for that flora would be pretty great. Or just, I'm sure there's got to be something cool on that slope, basically, is what it comes down to.
I just looked. I have been on Mount Toby.
All right. I thought so.
Quite a bit, I think. Around more of the base of it, doing labs and projects.
Yeah,
it's
on the north. Yeah, there's some on the north side where the tower road is. There's some pine plantation stands and things that have been thinned out. And there's all these brown wooden signs that... from the old forestry days, like, this is a shelter with thinning and mixed hardwoods, and they're all just rotting and falling over now, but I'm sure you've been there.
I was a bit distracted looking at the view, trying to remember if I've been up there, but you found a relocated population in the recent past, right? That hasn't been seen since, like, the 1800s?
Let me think. Geez, they all run together, Mike.
Well, all right, just go for it. Whichever one, then. If you found multiple, I want to hear that story.
What did I find? Let's see. Let me think about what. Not from the 1800s.
I could have swore you found even like a Cypripedium population that was unknown.
Oh gosh, I'm gonna have to scratch my head. It's dormant. I'm in dormant season mode. It's like everything's, you know, cut and dry and black and white.
Thank you. I got so flamed out by my friends recently for saying that dormant season botany is boring to me because I don't love sitting with a grass key for 6 hours and screaming.
Yeah. I'm just like, all those, the greens and violets from summer hues are just out of my mind right now.
Yeah.
But let's see, what did I find? Gosh.
What is your favorite discovery, if you have one? Of anything, even if it was already known.
That would be, you saw my email, so Isotria medialoides. That was not known. So I was working on, we published a flora of Franklin County. I live in Franklin County. That's where Greenfield is, just north of Amherst. And we published a county flora in 2020. And I was doing all sorts of rogue botanizing just in support of that county flora. And there was this orchid on this, it's a wildlife management area that was underexplored. And there's this pretty cool swamp, spicebush swamp and there's this little orchid that had been up for like a month. And it put out little buds, and the buds were just starting to expand. I went back like 4 or 5 times, and it was taking forever for this orchid to reveal itself. It was a Friday afternoon. And I was heading away. We were going up to Acadia for vacation. I'm like, I got to go. Before I go, I have to go check that orchid one more time. And I'm going in, walking into the edge of the swamp. I was already, this is like a familiar route already. And I was like 10 steps away from that. And all of a sudden, I was like, almost like somebody shouted to me from the left. And I head turned, and there was this canopy gap, and a tree had fallen over. Right up against the trunk of the tree was this Isotria plant with two capsules, like with a beam of light coming through the canopy gap, like the angels, a chorus of angels. I'm like, what the hell is that? And it wasn't, that wasn't the orchid I was going to see. The one I was going to see was just boring old Latanthera clavellata teasing me like it does. So that's like my, if you go back 5-6 times and the orchid's still not open, it's Latanthera clavellata. That's like my, don't bother going back again. But the Isotria, I'd never seen Isotria medialoides, so I'm like, had no service, trying to get the key. I think I had like one bar if I stood on the log. I managed to key it out to medialoides because it's all super blue-green right to the ground, really short pedicel, peduncle. whatever it is, peduncle. That's what it was, a double capsule one. And that was, it was almost new to the county, except one of the state botanists had found it a few towns over the year before. So those two discoveries were county records of a super rare, you know, that's a federally threatened, state endangered orchid. And so, you know, I think there are five other sites, Massachusetts, maybe six now.
So, yeah, I mean, it, like, made the news in Vermont a couple years ago, right?
Oh, yeah. Is that state historical? And they rediscovered it? I don't know. It's the wrong side of the state line, Mike.
Orchids, you know. No borders.
My biggest orchid daydream, Platanthera obtusata, speaking of North Country, is this two specimens from the Berkshires. It's a Thuja occidentalis calcareous swamp obligate, like a boreal, rich boreal Thuja swamp, which is like a place I need to go see. I've never been one of these things, but there are some rich boreal swamps in the Hinsdale Flats that are, you know, besides the fact that there's no Thuja at all, they're like ripe for Platanthera obtusata. And those are the two towns where the vouchers are from like 1850s and 60s. One of them, you know, those old vouchers make you scratch your head. You just want to go back and smack somebody. Be like, couldn't you just write like something down? Like one of them, the guy was like apparently 8 years old when he collected it. Like really calls into question its validity.
It's crazy though. Like Peter Raven, he's got a Manzanita subspecies named after him. That's the only one known in the world because he was a Boy Scout, just la 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 around San Francisco. And he's like, hey, so this doesn't work in the key. The botanist is like, damn kid, you're right. I'm like, okay, we found one.
Well, yeah, naivety is a gift. That's one thing that I'm losing as I become more experienced. You know, I used to be foolishly optimistic, like, oh yeah, this stupid rocky slope with cliffs and like that looks like it has absolutely nothing growing on it. There's got to be something up here, and I'm not going to be able to believe there's nothing growing up here until I go up and down it and bang the shit out of my shins, and then I'm like, oh yeah, I guess there's nothing up there. But it's like the enthusiasm of wondering that what could be up there. That's, I'm losing that, and that's kind of sad. You know, I don't know how to get that back.
I don't know. I think I've been hitting the late dormancy period blues where I'm just like, I'm done. You know, like I'm just so out of the mindset of getting out every second of the day and looking for stuff that is only there for 1 week of the year or something. You know, like that urgency hasn't been there. You know, it's very spoiled of me because I live in a beautiful area that I can always botanize. But like finding the weird little annual that grows on a sandstone slope in this one hill, like, I'm just like, I need to get excited about that again.
I'm trying to.
Yeah.
I'm thinking now that we've gotten into the new year, I'm like, all right, I can start thinking about May. Like I'm starting to schedule things for work in May. Oh, wow. May. If I'm scheduling stuff for work, that means it's coming.
Yeah. I just started hooking up hitch plans for the coming season. And I'm like, oh boy, that means it's on its way.
But yeah, I just agreed to do a field trip for New England Botanical Society this spring, which is going to be at Greylock. Well, that's where I want it to be. I have to, you know, line that up. But I know some people there since I work for them. So it'll happen.
Is it too early to officially plug it? Is this the place?
Yeah. Yes, I think it's legit. I mean, it won't be like the details won't be up for a month or two, but. Yeah, I'm aiming for late May, early June. It's going to be at Ragged Mountain in the town of Adams in Greylock Glen. And if New England Botanical Society's website is rhodora.org, named for the plant I've never seen in flower, which is shameful of me. But they're just Tom Groves, another podcast star. Plants are people too. He's leading the committee that's lining up the field trip. So Just got me on the hook last night, actually. So it's going to happen, Ragged Mountain. But it's going to that's not for the faint of heart. You know, there's not any real trails. There's some old logging roads that are trails. It is steep. And it goes up.
The best kind of field trips.
Yeah. There's some treacherous ledges. It's actually super weird. That whole mountain is like a stack of pancakes that are turned edgewise. One of those pancakes is some crazy mafic bedrock that I don't know what it is, but it's weird. And it stands up. There's all these little fins that run all the way up to like 2,600 feet elevation. And this it's like super rich, like all the way up to the subalpine zone. The richest microsites in the state. And this goes all the way up the mountain following this bedrock. There's a bunch of super rare things there. Arabidopsis lyrata, Blophilia, Hirsuta. What else is up there? Milium effusum, if you're a grass nerd. It's rare. Actually, Milium is rare. I think it's uncommon everywhere. It's kind of like a green mountain. That's its epicenter, and it gets into Canada, and it kind of goes into New York and New Hampshire, and it's in the Berkshires. But if you like grasses, which I hope everybody listening is into grasses, Milium is one of my favorites to find in the Berkshires. It's like super blue-green. Just looks like it's hanging out, like the family, and these rich, top of a rich slope. That'll be fun. Speaking of plant daydreams, I've been following these guys in the Catskills, and there's this cool plant called Adoxa. Adoxa moschel. Oh, well, I have to look that up so I can get it right for you. Adoxa. Guess what family it's in?
Adoxaceae.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Adoxa moschatelina. Moschatelina. You accept that as a legit pronunciation?
Sure.
Moschatelina.
Well, I always tease my coworkers that the CH is K because it's Greek, but I'm minority, like Baldaskinus, Skenoplectus.
I do throw in the CH, the hard K sound frequently.
It's also a dead language that is fake.
This has got to be a French word, moschatelina. But it grows on these weird, cool, high elevation, rich outcrops in the Catskills. Super rare, disjunct. And I'm like, shit, that's like exactly what I got going on Ragged Mountain. I mean, we need to get up there and break a leg or two legs and find this thing. Cause if it's going to be anywhere that hasn't been found, it's going to be there. Cause nobody's been up there. Cause I walked up there once and I found freaking Arabidopsis lyrata, which has like two other populations in the whole state. And they're nowhere near there. I'm like, obviously nobody's been here. Cause this is like any botanist that went up there would have honed in on these freaking rocks that are carpeted in like wild ginger and dicentra and, bulblet fern and like they would have found it. There's hundreds of plants, so there's got to be something else. That's the crazy thing about Massachusetts, hyper botanized, super small state, parcelized. You think like, oh, it's all been seen, but I find new stuff all the time.
Pine drops last year.
That's so weird. I'm like, thing about the Berkshires is it gets a lot of traffic, and I just wonder whose muddy boots brought them.
Those spores are small. Those seeds are small.
Yeah, and the sites are, the Berkshires are, especially it was found in South Berkshire County, which is heavy to limestone, and it's also heavy to Oldfield white pine. And those two, that sounds like, at least in the Northeast, that's its MO, like pine. Mm-hmm. Over rich bedrock, limestone-ish or similar. So I had the opportunity. Maybe it's always been there. Maybe there was more of it before it was all pasture. I didn't see it yet. I only saw it in Oregon for the first time. But the plant, the plants in Oregon are like friggin' sabers.
Oh, yeah, it's nuts. It comes to your hip.
So I'm okay not seeing the puny little Massachusetts plant. You know, I don't check the box. I'm good.
That thing is going to be swamped for the next few years too.
I don't. Yeah. See it. In general, I don't do botanical tourism in my own state. Like, there's a bunch of rare plants that I know if I wanted to see it, I could ask so and so, or they'd tell, bring it to me, or give me, show me, or whatever. But I just like finding it.
Myself. Yeah, just happening so, upon it.
Like, yeah, follow my nose, and it makes it more exciting. But once in a while, I break down, like a showy lady slipper. I'm like, how have I not seen this in flower yet? Just, I finally went to a site where I know they are at the right time. Wow. That was worth it. That was,
I've yet to see the ram's head lady slipper out.
Oh, me too.
Berkshires.
It's not there.
Not in the Berkshires. I know where, I don't want to say where it is because it's like the one population.
Right? Yeah. It's a.
Yeah. Oh no, I thought it was. I don't know. No. I looked for it once and then read a paper about it and then.
Well, it's almost. Yeah, I haven't seen it either. But last I heard, it was down to one plant. This is, you know, I look at the vouchers as I have top secret access. You know, it's all the suppressed information is on somebody. And like in the early 80s, there's this dude. It must have been like every time he went there, every spring, he'd just rip one out of the ground. It's like, oh, Jesus. Another year, another ram's head lady slipper. And now there's one plant, and I don't know if it's flowered, and people check on it. But I want to find a new population of that one, too. That one's on my list.
Yeah.
It's got to be somewhere. Actually, it was supposedly at Greylock, or was at Greylock. And so it could pop up there. I'm going to find it. You'll be the first to know, Mike.
Hell yeah.
Well, you and my 100 people that actually pay attention.
Well, cool, man. Do you have anything else you'd like people to know about?
Oh, I mean, we could probably do a whole nother show of tales from the field, okay. You know, but no, I guess I've got lots of things going on, but you know, this is all about the daily grind of what's Pete seeing. I'm just happy to share it and that people are interested in following along and dealing with my particular suite of humor and content. So,
thanks for sharing it.
Yeah. So I'm joining a prestigious list of guests too, which I'm really glad to you're putting this together because it kind of like breaks the ice with all these strangers. You know, Instagram is like I always felt like it was just a bunch of nobodies or like. It was like imaginary friends is what I called it.
Yeah.
Until I finally like met, actually Matt Charpentier, screen name is Plants and Mountains.
Oh yeah. I've been trying to get him on. Him and Grace.
I'll work on him. He came to a botany walk I think I led. And at the end he's like, hey, I love your feed. I'm like, oh shit.
I know, right? You're forget a that real it's person? A thing. Yeah. Everyone's like, are you Scrublore? I'm like, I told you that. I'm like, oh, that's right. I have a public profile.
Oh, I didn't introduce myself as Talus Walker in the beginning. You'll have to
That's how
that.
It is at like every conference. Like, oh, hi, I'm Mike. They're like, oh, yeah. Talus Scrublore. And I'm like, oh my God, yeah.
Just need, yeah. Just put the QR code and an avatar and your name badge. And... No. That's all right. This is good, Mike. Thanks for inviting me.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. I really appreciate it.
Hopefully it edits out okay.